I'm Johnny Smith.
I'm Richard Porter.
Welcome to Smith & Sniff, the podcast where two friends talk about cars and sometimes gardening with cars. I realised, you know, that there's an award-winning Chelsea flower show and also a presenter of Gardener's World that lives in the same town as me.
Really?
Yeah.
Who?
He's called Adam Frost.
Frosty?
Yeah. Do you know Adam Frost?
No.
Oh, well, he lives around here and he's won multiple Chelsea flower shows, and he follows me on social media, which I didn't realise until about 3 days ago. And I thought, he's presenting Gardener's World while Monty Don's in hibernation. Not hibernation, you know what I mean?
Have they put Monty Don in a box with some newspaper and straw?
Yeah, they've said goodbye to him for a very long time and then put him under the stairs cupboard. No, I don't.
But it's spring. They need to get Monty Don out now and get him out in the sunshine so he can warm up.
Oh, to be fair, he's isolating, I think. But So Gardener's World is on, is being televised, and Adam Frost is doing it from his garden on his own.
Oh, I see.
And I realised that where he's from or where he lives now, and it's in Stamford, really close to where I am. So, and I thought, oh, are they? I've been enjoying my garden because that's the extent of my travel at the moment, as a lot of other people are. And I thought, If I can get various motor vehicles into the back of my garden if I have a bit of a jiggle around, you know. And I thought that this is where Gardener's World is missing a trick, or where you and I are missing a trick, and we need to diversify. We should call it Cardener's World, and it should be people that have gardens with loads of motor vehicle toss in them. Because there's always someone in a town or a village who has a garden with a remains of a car or a Land Rover or an engine with a tarp on it. Always.
Always.
Always. There's always a backstory. It's usually a family argument.
Well, weren't we going to do that at one point? Weren't we going to do CSI tarpaulin, where we just cruised around towns looking for interesting shapes under tarps and then got in touch with the owner and went, well, first of all, we had to identify what it was, sort of a bit, you know, crime scene investigation.
Oh my man.
Which we have done. I know we've done, because I've been with you when we've spent. Remember, there was that one not far from me that we finally worked out was a Passat estate.
Was a Passat estate, exactly, sweating profusely under the sheet.
Yeah, just absolutely permanent sheen, a patina of moisture on the bodywork as it rots away. But also, why are you keeping the Passat estate? And that's where the show gets interesting, because we dig into the backstories.
Oh. It's like Tony Hadley wearing a really sort of nylon man-made fibre heavy shirt under the spotlight, just starting to really break a bead on. I have to
but
say,
there's a reason for keeping Tony Hadley. I don't really see the reason for keeping a Passat estate from the 80s.
No,
but there's got to be a backstory.
There's got to be. I think CSI tarpaulin is just an amazing. And do we have to be suited and booted and pull our sunglasses down and then reverse the car back up to the house, knock on the door and hold up a card which says something simply like tarpaulin scene investigation TSI, which isn't that an Audi engine or a VW?
There's going to be a lot of heavy braking followed by a lot of risk reversing when a target is sighted. And
there'll be auto slam, as Tiff used to call it, where you'd go from D to R really quickly when the car's still going forward.
On that note, I was writing something this week and I had to mention J-turns, and I suddenly thought,
oh yeah,
I think I've probably done a J-turn like twice in my life, both times in someone else's car on an airfield.
Yes.
And there's something that goes through me a bit about a J-turn. I think it's my natural sympathy for the track rod end that makes me a little bit uncomfortable with a J-turn. And you really only see them in cop dramas. They're not something that, you know, handbrake turns.
Yeah.
Well, you see sort of, you know, rally cars and things do those, and you see Russ Swift parking that way every time there's a Montego advert on.
Many times.
I've confused myself with the 80s, but it is, you know, the handbrake turns seem to be like something that happen a bit, and J-turns, they're sort of like the distant cousin that you don't see so much. But I also just think they're really fucking bad for the car.
Yeah, they are. They're hard. They're their bootleg turn, it was originally called, wasn't it?
Yes.
Which is what I remember watching when in the 80s as a kid, lots of J-turns on the A-team. The A-team van used to do a lot of J-turns.
Yeah.
And obviously Knight Rider with Kit and stuff. And I said to my dad, what is that called? What are they doing? And my dad went, oh, it's a bootleg turn, that. It's a bootleg turn. And
it makes it sound like you buy it from a market stall and it's got a different track listing to the real album.
Oh yeah, exactly. That's a rare limited press Japanese import, that one. Yeah, yeah. But the J turn is, I mean, I've not done many J turns, and I did one once in a long term test car as I was coming onto an airfield. Filming.
Were you coming onto the airfield backwards?
Well, as in, like, I can't remember this scenario, but I know I was in a Clio 197 Renault Sport.
Oh, I bet that J-turned quite nicely.
It J-turned really well. Unfortunately, and this is the bit I hadn't planned on, I J-turned up to, I think, Wookie Ford or whoever I was presenting with that day. And as the J-turn completed, I got out the car and smiled, and I heard a hissing, and both the front tyres had gone through broken glass and just instantly punctured.
You J-turned through broken glass?
I J-turned through broken glass. I spent the rest of the shoot trying to phone around Great Britain, trying to find tyres for a Clio, and I couldn't find them. So I had to get it emergency repaired, and I had to drive home at no more than about 45 miles an hour. So I my J-turn experience is somewhat tarnished after that. Anyway, hang on a minute. Well, I was talking about Gardener's World.
But I've just remembered something from the dim and distant past. On old Top Gear, we were filming one of those items that they just used to do on old Top Gear basically every couple of months about, police pursuit drivers and, you know, the ones who are supposed to get out of trouble with VIPs in the back kind of thing.
Oh, yeah,
and we had
this
bloke, took him to an airfield and went, go on, just show us some of the basic moves. And one of them was the J-turn. And we provided a car for him. And it was a Rover 75 press car. And in the course of doing repeated J-turns for the cameras, he ripped the front wheel off.
Off?
Yeah, the front wheel came off. He was doing it with Quentin as well, who, as we know, is a great enthusiast of palming, but it's not an aggressive driver who would be in a pursuit situation unless he could do it whilst just gently gripping the wheel with two fingers.
Finger and thumb. I can't imagine Quentin in a heavy chase situation.
No, I think he'd stop, get out and charm his way out of the situation with the terrorists before he'd be seen driving aggressively.
Oh, he would absolutely. He'd turn around and go, look, guys, is there anything that I can do?
I'm not. You won't find me driving like that. It's silly and it's uncouth and I'm not going to do it. Look, so, we really, really knackered a Rover 75. I just remembered that.
Bloody hell, the wheel came off.
I think, from memory, it didn't come fully off. It sort of, but it was all pointing the wrong way and bits were hanging off. Not pretty.
Not great.
No.
Not great.
Anyway, gardening.
So Gardener's World, okay, this show that doesn't exist, that should exist. Cars, motor vehicles in the front or back garden. But I can imagine we could do it. So what about we try and garden using cars and motorcycles? So you've got, this week, Monty Don's going to be doing full throttle clutch starts, digging furrows with his Tiguan. And then we're going to have... Adam Frost is going to show you how to dig a bed with a motocross bike on a 10 foot by 10 foot garden.
Now, what I'm going to do here in the middle of this lawn is I'm going to put in a circular flower bed for some herbaceous plants. And to ascribe the circle on the lawn so I know where to dig, I'm going to use this scrambler motorcycle.
It's a Honda two-stroke absolute killing death machine.
Doing massive. What are they called? It's the donut, isn't it? Is it still a donut when it's on a motorcycle? I'm not sure.
Yeah, it is. It's just a much tighter, harder affair because you're trying to tame the bull, really.
Monty Don in a tweed jacket absolutely lighting up the knobbly back tyre on an old Honda Scrambler.
Oh, lean it, all his body weight shifting to the handlebars.
Yeah, he's fully committed. I mean, he's he's over quite a lot, sort of knee down, but ragging in circles so that he can then go, that's going to look lovely.
I would, and then we pass over to Gay Search. Do you remember Gay Search? I don't know if she's still on Gardener's World, but my brother used to laugh at her name when we were kids. He'd go. And now we go over to Gay Search, who's transforming a garden in Will. Transforming a garden in Wiltshire using nothing but a hand-me-down Vauxhall Carlton.
Now I need to dig a couple of holes to put in these Leylandi, and I'm going to do it by absolutely lighting up the back tyres of this old BMW 535i. And it accidentally gets a bit more traction than they expect and launches forward, smashes through into a gazebo.
Into the neighbour's fence. You have done an awkward job. The camera cuts to the next shot. Now, with that all done, let's move on to the next job.
Oh, I see. You're going for the just cut away and as if nothing's happened. I imagine more that they would absolutely maintain their composure, but then he just steps out and goes, that hasn't worked. Let's get the old spade out instead. The steam starting to just curl from under the bonnet of the BM.
What, because it's been at 6,000 RPM, not going anywhere for ages?
Yeah, exactly, really just for a little bit. And then you know, it's actually it hit the fence post and it's probably cracked the radiator a little bit. It's not good news.
Well, Monty Don, this could start as a serious consumer piece. So we've had an awful lot of communications on from viewers saying how expensive rotavators have become. So as a consequence, we've decided to find a worthy alternative, and we think we found it. Over to Monty. A brand new Honda rotavator costs in excess of £1,200 these days. We've realised the job can be done easily and safely using one of these. Camera cuts to, and what we have here is an MOT failure Vauxhall Frontera. And I've fitted on the front tyres very thin snow style spike tyres. They were secondhand. And watch what we can achieve in a very short space of time. Cut to a huge amount of rooster tailing soil.
Is there a point where he has to go, now, I probably don't need to tell you this, but a heavily leaking differential is depositing oil into this border, and that's bad for the plants. So I'm just going to back the Frontera up and set fire to it.
Well, behind Monty Don's absolutely immaculate Victorian walled garden, sometimes the camera just lets slip on a slow pan. There's one of those trellises with a creeper on. And behind that is essentially a scrapyard of all of the MOT failure gardening implements that he's
Monty Don's way of finally admitting that he is in fact addicted to buying MOT failure shit off eBay.
Oh, he loves it. He absolutely loves it. He's got a Dutton Ranger.
And hang on, wait, I can't even tell if you're joking. Is he hasn't really got a Dutton Ranger?
I don't know. I don't think he has. Imagine if he has after all this chat.
You sound like one of those conspiracy theorists who, you know, they sort of say, oh, the aeroplanes, the contrails are spraying mind-controlling chemicals. And you go, well, they're not, are they? You can't prove that. And they go, well, yeah, but you can't prove they're not. It's like you've just gone, you can't prove that Monty Don hasn't got a Dutton Ranger.
Oh, yeah.
He's probably got a couple of them. He's got a Dutton Phaeton as well. He loves Duttons.
It's an instant standoff stalemate, isn't it? Instant, like, yeah, but you don't know, so therefore it's all null and void.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a bit of gardening. In all seriousness, though, I've enjoyed the garden, and I've got the tortoises have been really appreciating it, and I've built them something of an all-terrain course. So they've got plenty of angles and substrates, and I've given them some natural plants that they would dine on in their native environment. So I'm really pleased with that. It doubles as an off-road course for a radio control car, but I try not to do those two things at the same time. because you don't want to crash into a tortoise with a radio-controlled car. So
why not? They're armoured. I mean,
they're bloody hard, I'm telling you. Tortoises are amazing at digging and climbing. In fact, who came first? Land Rovers or tortoises? And they're both exceptionally old.
Well, I'm no David Attenborough, but it would be my certain belief that the tortoise came out before 1948.
I think you're absolutely right, Richard.
I mean, we can check this, or you know, someone can write in and correct us. I'm pretty certain that most animals were already around by the late 40s.
Do you think?
Well, we'll look it up. Listen, while we're talking about gardening, I was going to mention.
Gardening.
Yeah. Well, I know you're not a massive fan of the Pet Shop Boys, and I am. And every year, because I'm a massive fan, I buy their. They release a little book every year of just sort of what they've been up to and information about new songs and all this sort of stuff.
Do they?
And it's fantastic. Yeah, really beautifully produced little hardback book. It's mega. No other band does it. And it's got little interviews and so it's all. It's just terrific. And there was a Q&A thing in the new one, which just came last weekend. And there's this bit which I know you'll enjoy because. I don't even know what the question was because I've got it. I haven't got the book with me. I've just got a picture of this section on my phone. But Neil Tennant says, I want to use this as an opportunity to complain about something. It would be, why are leaf blowers so noisy? In my street in London, they blow the leaves away and the noise it makes is phenomenal. Quite honestly, you could do it with a broom. Chris Lowe chimes in. Rather than blowing them away, why don't they vacuum them up? That's what I don't understand.
Absolutely.
And I thought, I know someone else who has this opinion about leaf blowers. Well, apart from me, I mean, I agree with both the Pet Shop Boys and the other person who holds that view, which is you.
Oh, they couldn't be closer to the truth. I genuinely think it is an answer to a question no one asked. Because why blow when you could? So you don't just go. I'm just going to go and blow the floors of my house inside. Do you? Nobody does that because that's a dim idea.
No, I've got a new dust blower. Won't I just blow the dust to another place where it's still being dusty?
Yeah.
No, because it's a blower. That's better than a sucker.
It's nonsense. And also, and the fact, I mean, really, it's a total kidney punch to Mother Nature, the fact that not only are you doing a pointless act of blowing leaves, but you're burning fuel to do it. And it's just...
Yes.
As I've explained to you before, I did get really rudely awoken by a two-stroke leaf blower once on Easter Sunday morning in America. I did have to have stern words with the contractor. it just so happened that I had no clothes on. I'd totally forgotten that I was naked. But anyway, it's another...
In that respect, it was a good job that his large petrol-powered thing wasn't able to suck, or he may have attacked you with it with
absolutely
disastrous consequences for your cock and balls. But that's, it's funny, now you've mentioned it, I suddenly think, yes, that is the mark of staying in a hotel in America, is getting woken up a bit earlier than you want by a bloke
with
a leaf blower outside. And it's, why do they do that? It's infuriating.
It's not right.
I think you once mentioned that your disdain for leaf blowers on Twitter, and TV's Tiff Niddell called you out on it and went, oh, you don't understand. Oh, they're brilliant. You'll understand one day.
Oh, as I think, like,
age comes wisdom and an appreciation for leaf blowers.
I just don't think there's any wisdom attached to leaf blowers. I think that's the underlying problem there. Tiff needs to just get a rake out. I've got two massive, I'm staring at two huge deciduous trees in my back garden. And so come autumn, the garden does get dumped on. And I just still use a fully manual rake. It's very efficient. You get a bit of a bead on, but it's great. And I've, when the kids were a bit younger and they had those battery-powered like little cars that they could drive around in, I attached a rake to the back of one of them and they raked to basically Silverstone into the lawn.
Ah.
And I took a picture once. It was brilliant. And
that's fantastic.
Yeah, they made a course and then helped me clear it up afterwards, full of fallen, yellowy leaf litter. And it was wonderful.
Well, you see, I have a problem because I rake up because we get a lot of leaves falling in our garden here. But then also, you know, we have a large dog, so you've always got the dog shit landmine.
Oh no! Oh, do you leak? You have
got to be. But that's the thing. But you've got to be really careful. You basically got to go and do a sort of site survey first.
Yeah.
Because it's not very nice to rake up.
Oh, raking a cable. Raking a cable is the worst.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I suppose worse only would be going over one with a lawnmower.
Oh, it scalps it. It's a poo scalp. It's awful. Absolutely awful.
Actually, worse. Well, what would? No, I suppose going over one with a Flymo would be. Okay.
Well, a strimmer with, and you're not wearing a visor is probably the worst.
Oh my god!
I have
slices of dog plop flying up into your face.
I've done it when I used to mow lawns for a Saturday job. I have accidentally flailed one, and I kept my mouth shut, and it sort of gave me a dirty Sanchez, I think they call it.
Oh man!
And I luckily had a handkerchief, and I had to quickly do that, and then I might have gone home and jiffed my own face. It was pretty gross.
This reminds me of when I just got a new phone and I was out walking our dog and she laid a dog log and I bent down to pick it up, and as I did, my phone was in the inside pocket of my jacket for some reason, and it slid out and it hit the ground about an inch to the right of the turd and cracked the screen of my brand new phone. And I sort of found myself in this weird...
How old
what
was your
if
phone?
Dilemma. I was like, oh, a week, if that.
Oh,
brand
shit.
New phone. It was really annoying. And I thought, now, if it had fallen just an inch to the left, it would have the fall would have been cushioned by that
by
dog
feces.
Shit. But then on the other hand, my brand new phone would have fallen into dog shit. So I don't know which is worse. And I could never quite reconcile that.
That's like an Andy McNab book, Cushioned by Feces. Volume 1. He had the choice. He could die or he could leap into a huge cushion of feces. To cushion his blow.
The hero is escaping from the hijacked embassy, but the only way he can get out as the gunmen come up the stairs is to leap from the window into the open septic tank below.
Oh, gosh. Oh, man.
And he recently got a paper cut, so he's especially concerned about infection.
Well, I had to deal with our septic tank only 2 days ago. We had a bit of a blockage in one of the conduits. I have to say, man, big shout out to Kärcher pressure washers, because they're so much more than just a car cleaning device. Yes, we know they do patios, but I've unblocked our sewage system 3 times using Kärcher pressure washer, so that's pretty cool.
A friend of mine's just bought a Kärcher, and
I'm big on Kärchers.
He had to wait a while for it, and they actually sent him an email going, it's on its way, but just to let you know, big demand at the moment. I think Kärcher are coining it in, because everybody's going,
course.
I've got not much
everyone's
to do.
Everyone's valeting.
Ooh, I've got a mossy patio. What I need here is a Kärcher. It's a Kärcher.
It
sounds like for some reason I can't say Kärcher without thinking of Gärcher, the Cockney. I don't even know what Gärcher means in Cockney. Get Gärcher. You, Gärcher.
Do you know what? It's actually not Kärcher either. It's Kärcher or Kärcher.
Is it?
Because my brother keeps correcting me. Yeah,
Kärcher. Like a Scouser would say it.
It's a Scouse Austrian.
Kärcher. Ich bin sales rep for Kärcher.
Yeah, you've got to have Paul O'Grady obviously doing all of the promotional videos, because he's just so enthusiastic, isn't he? That's what I like about Paul O'Grady. Just, unless it's a dog, he doesn't give a shit. Oh, all right, now we've got another radio show. Oh, you know.
Just so disinterested in the people he's supposed to interview. Now, it says here you've got a book out. Yes, it's about dogs. Oh, right, that's great.
Oh, it's great, brilliant. Yeah, you know what? He's like, he makes Jack D look like a really happy children's presenter.
Actually, I wanted to raise with you a slightly sensible question, and it reminded me, because you were just talking about Monty Don's unprecedented collection of MOT failure cars. I suddenly had this thought the other day, and I don't know why it popped into my head. I was saying, you know, what are the pros and cons of the government insisting that when you sell a car, it has to have a fresh MOT on it? Because, you know, they changed the thing with tax. Now you can't sell a car with tax on it. The tax, you cancel out the tax when you sell the car, and the person buying it has to start again. And I'm not even sure why they did that. I can't remember why.
No, I find it irritating.
I find it a bit irritating. And also, it's like, it's removed one of the things that people used to put in adverts. That, I mean, it's got 6 months tax left on it. But if you bought an old crapper, you always felt like you were slightly up on the deal if it had a bit of tax left on it.
And oh, totally! It's that's that taken and that joy fuel away. In the tank. Yeah, I mean, actually, I've haggled and bought cars before when they've said I'll put a fresh 12 months or 6 months tax on it.
Yes,
you know, because that's like another bargaining tool.
Yeah, that's it. Because I bought a car once.
What are the pros and cons?
I bought a car once where there was almost no tax left on it, and from a dealer, and I went, stick a bit of tax on it, would you? And he went, at this price. He wasn't a cockney. I just automatically doing everything. But yeah, it turned into a bit of a thing. I was like, oh, come on. I mean, what? It's just, you know, it's a gesture, just 6 months. And he was like, I'm giving this thing away as it is. And I was like, well, you're not, are you? But it was, yeah, it got into a bit of a, but he won.
Really?
Yeah. He was really digging in. And sort of, you know, I felt like then I was duty bound to dig in for a bit. And then in the end, it was just like, oh, well, you know, I want the car. I'm not going to walk away over this. That would be petty.
He knew.
Yeah, that's the thing. He knew already that I wanted it. I think he'd seen it in my eyes. So yeah, but that's the thing. I suddenly thought, now why would you not insist that a car? I suppose the way. Well, I'd be interested to hear your views on this. But I suddenly thought, oh, I bet it would lead to a massive surge in fraudulent MOTs. Well, yeah, because you buy a lot more cars than me, and I reckon you understand. I was expecting the fact that you would just go, no, you couldn't do that because this. But do you think there's more downside than upside to it?
To putting fresh ticket on a car, insisting on a fresh ticket? Well, I think what it would do is, I think it would make buying and selling cars probably less worrying for a lot of people. But
that's
I
what
think
I'm thinking,
that,
yeah,
because obviously it's mandatory. And do you know what's weird? I wrote the word mandatory down as something to talk about today. It's a word I very much like, and it's not used enough. I certainly don't use it nearly enough, although I've managed to weevil it in, because it rhymes with banditry. And the thing about the word banditry is, again, it's just not used enough in this day and age. And when they're put together, mandatory banditry, again, a term that no one ever uses. No one ever uses the term mandatory banditry, because banditry is not mandatory.
I was once at the Belgian Grand Prix, and I bumped into Martin Brundle, who I've met before a few times, and he's a really lovely chap. And so I went,
nice bloke.
Hi,
very
Martin.
Thin necklace.
Yes. Yeah,
very thin gold necklace.
Loves it's almost like a hair's width, isn't it? But very gold.
Microns.
You don't just get that anywhere. That's a specialist necklace. But yeah, lovely chap. And I said, oh, hi, Martin. You know, thinking, it was one of those ones where I was like, is he going to remember who I am? And he was like, oh, hello, Richard. And I was delighted. And we were standing there in the paddock talking. And then someone else came over to say hi to him. And Martin Brundle turned to me and said to this guy who'd come over, have you met this bandit? And I didn't know whether that was an insult or not.
Really?
He said it in a warm sort of tone. I think he was using it to mean like a scoundrel.
He's a bit of a rogue, yeah.
He knows that I write Sniff Petrol and other sort of jokey things about Formula
Satire.
One.
Satire.
Yeah, so I think...
Is he cool with you? He's cool with that?
Yeah, yeah, he's totally cool with me. He's always been lovely, and I've seen him, you know, a few times around, and he always stops for a chat, and he's such a nice bloke, and he's always, you know, loves to have a little gossip about F1 and all sorts. He's no proper bang-up chap, really like him. But yeah, he called me a bandit once, and I still don't know why or what
that's just brilliant. I'm so glad that the mandatory banditry conversation has actually yielded some use.
But then
I like that.
Hang
great.
On, you're saying that mandatory rhymes with banditry, but you see, I think mandatory is one of those words that's got at least three possible pronunciations, because it could be mandatory and mandatory
gosh.
As well.
Oh, mandatory, which that's an Americanism, isn't it? Mandatory.
Mandatory. I don't know. I always imagine Americans might go, it is mandatory to do the bandatory, and then it doesn't quite work.
Bandatory?
Bandatory. Some bandits were caught doing bandatory. I wouldn't put it past them.
Oh, my
gosh.
You know
how sometimes American pronunciation sort of catches you out, where you go, why are you saying it like oregano?
It's centrifugal.
Centrifugal. I know. Can't even... do that. Centrifugal. It's centrifugal, mate. Just say it like that. Nope.
Oh.
Hey, don't be a bandatory person about this.
Bandatory. That's awful. I hadn't even thought of it.
But mandatory. I think you could go either of three ways on that.
We've talked about interestingly named media companies before. I think I've decided if I ever set one up, it might be mandatory. I'm not sure if I would get any business.
And then you'll sell a show to a US company and they'll go, Johnny, just one question. Why is your company called Mandatory Banditry? It doesn't rhyme. Well, it does. Mandatory. No, it does not. We're cancelling the show.
You guy, you're a bozo. I'd have to add bozo there. Again, a word.
You're an asshole.
You're an asshole. Jerk off, insert other...
Well, don't you think that asshole is lighter than arsehole? Like, asshole does sound like an insult in and of itself. You don't immediately think of the actual hole in your bum. Arsehole is somehow
more... What are you talking about?
Arsehole's more... Somehow it's more technical and it's a bit ruder. If you go, you arsehole, it's like, oh, bloody hell, all right. It's like calling someone a prick.
Well, it's a little bit more my macro lens.
Yeah. It's exactly that. It's a macro lens insult. Anyway, why aren't... Because the MOT thing, I thought about it. I can't even remember how it pops into my head, but then I thought it's a bit like how now you have to have a survey done on your own house before you sell it.
Oh, and it gives just absolute bobbins.
Well, it's a pain in the bum, isn't it? But it's also gives the buyer a bit more peace of mind. I think that's why they wanted to do it. And I thought, well, if you did that with MOTs... it would give some reassurance. Conversely, there'd be lots of hooky MOTs floating around, and it's an added expense. And there'd have to be exemptions for cars that are being sold as non-runners.
Yeah, and the other thing is if you're already going to sell a vehicle, a lot of the time it's because the love's gone and you want something else, or let's say you run low on money and you need to coin some money back. I think it'd be a very sour ending to the relationship where you've got to spend more money. And therefore, I personally would be like, do you know what? I'm just going to keep it because I've just MOT'd it. I had it serviced not long ago. The tyres I know are pretty good. Do you know what? Bollocks. I'm not selling this to anybody. So it might encourage hoarding. Yeah, just be like, Richard, why have you still got that other car? And it's like, oh, because I spent a bit of money MOTing it and then realised I liked it and I haven't told my wife.
Well, like
talking of which, how strong is the temptation to buy cars in this moment of semi-isolation? Goodness me.
Well, yes and no. I find myself browsing Car and Classics and all the usual sites that we waste our time on. And I find myself going, well, they'll be desperate for... I was doing it last night. I did a little Zoom chat with three mates where we decided in advance we would each pick a couple of old cars to share with the group, one under 10 grand and one under 20 grand. And I got a Citroen CX for my under 10 grand. And we were all looking at it, and it was almost simultaneously, two of the other blokes went, I think it was up for 9 grand. Two of the other blokes went, they take 7.5 for that, because it's just in this climate.
Which is brilliant.
And it's true. Yeah. I sort of do find myself looking and going, oh, I bet they take a low offer on that. But then, that's the problem. I'm not using the cars that I have, so what I don't really need... Is another one, but this is different for you because you could stash it somewhere. I leave my cars on the street. I don't have a garage or anything, so I'd just be buying aggro.
I just want to make this totally clear to everybody listening. I haven't bought a car during lockdown. I haven't.
Are you lying? Because your wife will hear this.
I'm saying absolutely nothing. All I'm saying is subscribe to my YouTube channel, Car Pervert, and you'll see that I'm almost certainly haven't bought another car. recently. almost certainly. Almost certainly.
Well, but how do you buy a car at the moment? Because you're not supposed to go and, you know, do non-essential travel. It's some friends of ours.
You need connections. You need connections, Richard. There are still ways and means.
Ways and means. Yes, I know.
Remote payment.
I mean, I'm not worried about that so much as just actually getting the damn thing.
Well, you see, we live in a world where there are companies and websites like Shipley where transporter companies going up and down the country delivering X, Y, and Z still need to fill their trailers and make ends meet. As long as they're not coming into close proximity with others, you might find that vehicles can be moved here and there with relative ease.
Huh. I hadn't thought about that.
I'm not really speaking from experience.
I've
merely done some research. So,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Oh, I know what I wrote down, apart from all-terrain tortoise and... and Gardener's World. I actually thought, what sticker should I put on the back of one of my tortoises? I put one shell, scratch it, or something like that. I was going to, you know, what would be an alternative for one life, live it? I don't know.
Don't tortoises live for a long time? Like hundreds of years, potentially?
Yeah, well, we've had the male for 13 years, and he's still extremely youthful. He was 3 when we got him. And I had a moment not long after we got him where I said to my wife, I said, he might still be with us when we're retired. How weird would that be?
That is quite weird, isn't it?
And we got him before we were married. So it's like, yeah, I mean, tortoises. And I'm pretty sure there's a relationship between tortoises and car enthusiasts, because I know there's a watch. There's always been a bit of a fascination with watches and mechanical stuff, but I'm pretty sure Clarkson had or has a tortoise, pet tortoise. In fact, could he? He does Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Could he be the anchor on Gardener's World now that he's got some agri credentials?
He would fulfil the... I know it's a different programme, but you know, on Countryfile, like John Craven... is just standing in a field, just basically linking in and out of all the other films, isn't he?
So yeah, Clarkson, he doesn't could go do anywhere that. Anymore.
He's just standing in a field going, well, who would have guessed it was an MG midget under there? I don't think that's coming back. But obviously it symbolises their dead son. Okay, moving on to Carlisle now, where Johnny and Richard are slamming on the brakes because they've just spotted what they think might be a Nissan Silvia drift car under a tarpaulin.
If we could convince him to do that, that would really raise our, profile of the show.
Yeah,
I feel.
Yeah, really, really sell it. This could be, in fact, Mandatory Banditry's first TV commission.
Oh, I mean, without a doubt, it's got Mandatory Banditry Productions written all over it, hasn't it? Or is it Mandatory Banditry Media?
Banditry Media, definitely.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, there we go.
Do you know what? Someone listening to this might blimmin' register it, and then I'm snookered.
Well, you better get in there, then.
I feel like I shouldn't have said it out loud. No. Damn.
While you're here, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, that's what this is about, Richard, you absolute coon. I'm not going anywhere, am I?
Last week, you know, you were talking about your mate Greasy Mark. I have some follow-up questions. Now, one of them is... why is he called Greasy Mark? And the other one is about a very cryptic text message you sent me earlier this week where you went, remind me to tell you about when Greasy Mark almost drowned on my stag do.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It just came to me late at night before bed when I'm sometimes at my most creative. Let me think. Okay, so Greasy Mark's called Greasy Mark because he worked in a scrapyard, and he was always covered in oil and grease. It doesn't matter how much he tried to wash himself, everything was impervious. So he was exceptionally well lubricated as a human being. Sorry, my children are trying to kill one another downstairs.
Yeah.
It's just the nature of the beast at the
moment, isn't it?
So Greasy Mark's very greasy and builds lots of things, both at work and at home. And he runs a garage now, a repair garage. And Greasy Mark. So my stag do, we decided to be a bit different, and we had a stag weekend where we canoed down the River Wye, which is beautiful. And we wound up over the course of about a day and a half in Hereford. And Hereford is where we did the main stag do. We went out on the town and all that stuff. Yeah. But we camped and we all canoed and took our own supplies. So my best man, Dan, fantastically organised it all. Most of us had brought our own watercraft. Some of us went for the inflatable kayak. Some of us went for one of us went for an ex-hire rowing boat, and bought a really. But and although there were strict instructions of like we have to just self paddle, he bought straight off the shelf. Hadn't even run it in or read the instructions. A Suzuki, quite powerful two-stroke outboard, and put it on an ex-hire rowing boat, and he was just brilliant. And painted it all up with the signage Bald Watch instead of Bay Watch in yellow and red, because everyone on board that boat had no hair. So, nice. Yeah, it was great. But Greasy Mark turned up and he had what looked like what looked like an 80s slalom canoe. It was like a really, really, you know, it looked like the shape of a pike fish. You know, it was very purposeful. Right. We're like, oh, okay, you're a bit of a canoe, right?
Yeah, aren't they quite hardcore?
Yeah, they are. Really hardcore. And I went, we went, oh, you bit of canoe, Mark? He went, no, I've just borrowed it from a friend. I went, oh, cool. Can have a great time. Bear in mind, I'm not saying this is a great idea, but bear in mind for the entire duration we were drinking Scrumpy, with my particular kayak had an inflatable dinghy tethered to it, which was full of cold water with Scrumpy submerged in it. So people would paddle alongside us, get a bottle of Scrumpy and take it into their boat. So we just had this constant supply of Parson's Choice, which was a local Somerset Scrumpy, which for about the first 15 minutes of drinking it, it's repulsive, and then it becomes okay. And
this is like an episode of Casualty unfolding.
Well, yeah. But what's weird is we all got in the river and we all had life jackets on and all had our supplies in waterproof bags and stuff, and it was all very jolly. We started canoeing and stuff, and I quickly realised that Greasy Mark was just sort of, well, we were paddling downstream and the canoe was sort of spinning and not in any kind of control. And then it went into the bank a few times and we're like, is he drunk already? And he wasn't drunk. And then it turned out, because he had a very pale face, we're like, yeah, are you okay? You're not feeling very well. He went, well, there's something I haven't told you. And he basically said, I've never learnt to swim and I've never been in a canoe before. And I sort of sobered up a bit as the groom going, what? It's the stag. God. What are you thinking?
He brought a hardcore slalom canoe to a waterborne stag do and then admitted that he couldn't swim.
But it's like turning up to a track day in some widow-making car, isn't it? You know, like a 911 RSR from the 70s, and going, have you ever driven this car? No, I've never driven, actually.
Yeah, I don't know just drive at all. But that's a Porsche 917 Longtail.
Yeah.
Endurance racer. Where did you get it from? What are you doing? I don't know. What's that's extraordinary. He could have died.
Well, he did nearly die. I'll gloss over that bit, but he didn't. And that's fine. Yes. And we ended up in Hereford eventually, and we had a fantastic time out on the town where it was mandatory. I'm going to use that word again.
Do you mean mandatory?
It was mandatory. Definitely mandatory. It was mandatory for us to go out on the town. And my organiser of the stag do, my best man Dan, had written strict instructions. We are going out on the town wearing socially unacceptable shoes. And that's what we all did. And we went out on the town and wore socially unacceptable shoes. And I have to tell you, man, it was one of the funniest nights of my life. Despite the fact that I got the front of my trousers torn off, I had to spend most of the night. So I was wearing And the other thing about this is my dad came on my stag do, and I don't think he was prepared for what unravelled.
Oh, I'm actually crying.
There's so many...
Oh, my Lord.
There's so many amazing moments from it that I... And one of them was definitely going out on the town wearing... Oh, this is awesome. Going out on the town wearing terrible shoes. Dan had said, I'll sort your shoes out, Johnny. Don't you worry about a thing. I'll sort you some brilliant shoes out. He brought me some... It was just amazing. Sort of traditional Indian festival shoes, I suppose you call them. They look like Aladdin's shoes. They curled all the way around at the end. And they were gold leaf. They were just amazing. So and they had no grip at all. They were completely smooth underneath. So as I found out on the dance floor, it was almost lethal. But and the evening finished with the best man Dan. We all managed to meet and get into this taxi, which was a minibus. And Dan was like, where are you guys? And we're like, we're all on the bus. Go, no, you're not. I'm on the bus. He got on a bus with a load of people who he didn't know and went off to a completely different town. and then his phone ran out of battery and we didn't see him again until the morning. But up until that point, he was properly on it.
Jesus,
what he did, someone found a shoe on the dance floor, a woman's shoe, and instead of handing it into reception... took it straight to the bar and had about 12 shots put in it, and we were drinking a vodka, all sorts of stuff, all sorts of spirits out of this female high heel. There was no vehicles really, motor vehicles involved in my stag do, which was quite nice. Apart from Baldwatch, which we quickly realised, that's an almost another story, that you do have to run in outboard motors. You can't really start them up from fresh and run them at full RPM with five large men and a load of beer inside.
this reminds me, maybe next week I'll tell you the story of James May and the woefully underpowered outboard motor. But I feel like this week we will never top you losing the front of your trousers whilst wearing Aladdin's shoes, and we should probably wrap things up.
God, hey, we were just getting it. Yeah, those trousers.
Bad always way. Nice to talk. Thank you for listening to Smith and Sniff, the podcast. Please remember to like and subscribe and do all of those things that you're supposed to do. We were last week number one in the UK automotive podcast chart, or the Apple podcast chart, certainly, and number one in the UK leisure chart as well. Above Gardner's Question Time and Claire Balding's dogs. So take that, Balding, your national treasure. It won't last. Obviously, there's been some glitch in their calculations, but thank you. Is the reason I bring this up is to say thank you very much for listening to our often strange and pointless show. And hopefully, after this one, you'll listen to next week's as well. And subscribe.
Like and subscribe. And we've had some really nice feedback and some 5-star ratings, which, frankly, I just can't believe.
No,
but
me neither.
It's lovely. And if you want to sponsor this podcast, I thought I'd just put this in there. Richard won't be happy with me, but I'm going to say it. Sponsorship is welcomed. Well, why not? Why not?
All right.
Damn it.
Fine.
We can be sponsored by agricultural machinery, gardening implements, shoes, you name it. It's
Monty
all there
Don's world
take.
Of MOT failure cars. Anything is possible. All right, mate. I'll talk to you next week then.
Take care.
Bye.